Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements, and we will be here for the next hour talking about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. If you have a question for us, would like to comment on the show, or have a suggestion for a topic or guest you would like to hear about, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or follow us on the Walter Anderson Nursery main Facebook page. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Looks like it's going to be a nice day today.
We've had some nice warm weather again now.
It's about time.
It's nice to see the sunshine again. I live in Encinitas, and for 3 weeks straight, every morning it was almost raining.
Yeah.
It was such heavy dew and just misty. We'd be soaked being out in it.
Yeah. You know, it was the night of the 16th. I had gotten a notice from Vandenberg that there was going to be a rocket launch. And so I set my alarm on the phone for a few minutes before the launch, and my phone went off, and Melanie and I were sitting there watching TV, and it was about an 8:30 launch. I'm like, I don't know if I want to go out and take a look. So I go look. So I walked out in the backyard, absolutely perfectly clear. I'll go watch this one, and went out front. Oh my word. It was one of the most spectacular launches I have ever seen. It was absolutely incredible. It was perfect.
The sky was beautiful.
Wow. That night. It was absolutely perfect launch weather. And, being able to see it go was really amazing. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, if you go to the Vandenberg website, you can actually sign up for email notifications when they're going to launch. And there's also a website called spaceflight.now or spaceflight.com. And they have a launch schedule for all around the world where they're launching all over the world. But the Vandenberg ones are listed there. But what's amazing is that even though there's, like right now, I think there's 3 Vandenberg launches listed, they just pop up. So it's kind of like they just like, oh, you know what? We're going to go ahead and launch tonight. And they just do it. So if you're interested in that, sign up for the email notifications, and then the daytime launches don't amount to much. You really can't see anything, but you get it in that about an hour after twilight. If it's a clear night, it is absolutely amazing to see.
That's the tie into the gardening part, the clear weather, beautiful.
The clear weather. Okay. Not much of a tie-in, but it's a benefit of having good gardening weather is being able to see a really good launch.
Well, and it gets you out in the garden to go look for it.
Get you out in the yard.
Get you in the yard. Yeah.
Well, for me, the view is better in the street than it is in the yard, but definitely worth taking a look at. Let's see. We've got quite a few things to talk about today. Oh, one of the things I found, that I found online and actually have some on order is I found a source for kukui nut tree seeds to grow them which, for those of you that aren't familiar with kukui nut, it's also known as candle nut. Very, very common over in Hawaii. As a matter of fact, every ABC store in Hawaii sells kukui nut lays, and it's a hard shell nut. When they polish the nuts, they're actually quite pretty, really, really dark brown, very glossy, very hard. It's a really neat tree, and the tree itself gets to be, over in the islands, they get very big.
Yeah.
Over here, they don't get quite as big, but
maybe
we had
25, maybe.
About 25 feet. Yeah. Yeah, we had one in our yard when we lived on Ticonderoga Street, and it actually produced a lot of nuts. Mm. But then when my parents moved, that tree disappeared, but I hadn't been able to find them for a long time. But I did find a source for the seed. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to get some growing again and get them back into production.
When I was director of gardens at San Diego Botanic Garden, we had 3 on the property.
Oh, really?
And they're a lovely tree.
It's really pretty.
Really beautiful.
Has kind of a grayish foliage to it. It's not green. It's not super green.
Yeah. Very nice structure. The nuts are fun. It's Aleurides. Let me see. Melicensis.
Melicensis. That's right. Yeah.
The flower spikes are nice. They're quite pretty. And I think the nuts, the last time we talked about this, it's 80% oil in the nuts. That's why they're a candle.
They could use them as candles. Yeah.
Yeah. They used to actually measure time in Hawaii.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Right. You could actually say, I'll see you in 6 kukui nuts.
And I'll raise you 3.
About 15 minutes apiece is what they last.
I had forgotten about that. Yeah. I did actually go online to look to see what the tricks are to getting them to germinate. And one of them, you have to have patience because it takes about 2 to 3 months for the seed to germinate. The other thing is you got to scarify them.
Yes.
Scarify them and then soak them in water to get the moisture into the kernel so that it has enough moisture to germinate.
Was there a process recommended, like a file or sandpaper or a knife? Or
the guy was using this, looked like a kitchen knife, which didn't look like a good idea to me. So I think I'm probably going to use it.
Yeah. Did he have five fingers?
He had all of his fingers, but I don't know how long that lasted. But that was the last thing I was going to do, is take a big chef's knife and start trying to carve on a...
They remind me a little bit of a chestnut, actually.
Much harder.
Sort of the same size, shape, and
if
you just nick it a little bit, just so that you can get
just enough to get the through the surface moisture. To get the moisture into it. Yeah. So keep an eye out.
Cool.
End of summer, maybe we'll have some kukui nut trees available. I don't know how well they'll do here inland. They'll probably have to have some protection, but on the coast they do just fine.
Oh, they do great on the
coast. It's a really neat tree.
And they are edible if you cook them first. Poison if you don't. But and we actually made sort of a little sauce out of it, which was interesting. One of the parties we had.
Yeah, I read that they make a relish
with the nut meat.
Right. It's also a laxative, so you caution there.
I saw everybody running.
And it's used for dyes as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like acorns. Acorns are poisonous unless you process them, which always made me wonder, how did the indigenous people in this area figure that out? I mean,
when Uncle Bob died, tried a different way.
It's kind of like the mushroom thing. It's like, how many people died before they figure out that you really can't eat them. And George, it's like you say, you can eat any mushroom once.
All mushrooms are edible
once. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we hopefully will have some kukui nuts in the not too distant future. Another plant that we found, also this one kind of linked to Hawaii, although it wasn't always, Carissa tomentosa, which we used to get from Hawthorne Nursery, which is based in Torrance, I believe. They used to have a growing yard up in Fallbrook, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And then I'm trying to remember when it was that they closed. It's been a number of years, probably about 10 years ago now. They closed their Fallbrook yard, but they always had they were one of those nurseries that grew some interesting stuff. And one of the plants that they had that we used to stock when they had it was Carissa tomentosa. And it looks very similar to the regular Carissas that you find, natal plum. Grandiflor. A growth habit of Carissa grandiflor. Big foliage, big rounded shrub. But the foliage, unlike the regular Carissas, is kind of a grayish, velvety color. The thorns are much more pronounced. So if you want to plant something to keep people away from your house, that's a good one. But the flowers, I mean, it blooms in clusters, whereas the Carissa grandiflora and the other Carissas typically are just single flowers. But Carissa tomentosa blooms in clusters. Almost looks like a bunch of Hoya flowers, the way that it blooms in kind of a ball. But the fragrance is
really
unbelievable.
I think most of the Carissas are, all of them.
They're all fragrant.
Spectacular.
But this one's exceptionally nice.
This one is exceptional.
The fruit ripens black on that, right? Not like a regular Carissa, which
much
is
darker.
I've never seen the fruit never seen the fruit on tomentosa before.
And flowers also have some pigmentation, which all the others are pure white.
Yeah, they're a little pink.
This has some pink suffusion, almost like a little plumeria looking flower.
Yeah.
Well, that would be, isn't plumeria in the dog vein family?
It is in the dog
vein. Yeah, they're in the same family.
So is Carissa. So that makes sense. Which means the sap is toxic. Don't lick the sap.
Yeah.
Yeah, sappy little things.
Yeah. But our friend Tom Peregrossi from Vintage Green Farms over in on the Big Island in Hawaii, he grows it, and mm-hmm. he had some, mm-hmm. and I bought the last three that he had.
Oh my goodness!
So they are out in our shade house right now, coming along. We
shout out to Tom. He's a great grower. He used to be in San Diego.
Yeah, he was in San Diego for a long time. Has some really, really neat stuff over there. So if you want to see what Tom's currently got available, he does ship to the U.S. Legally to the mainland, does ship legally to the mainland, and it's Vintage Green Farms is the name of his company. I think it's vintagegreenfarms.com if I'm not mistaken. But you can go and see what he's got available now. He also has stuff that cycles through periodically, so if you don't
keep checking the website,
keep checking because
there's always new fun things.
Yeah.
And his plants are always of exceptional quality.
I was surprised.
I've ordered from him many times, and he also ships them beautifully.
Yes.
They come packed so well. They're not damaged when they arrive. So.
Yeah, and he ships priority mail, so mm-hmm. it gets here within a couple of days. Never an issue. I shouldn't say I was surprised. I was shocked at how big the plants were.
Yeah.
I did not expect. We got them in, they were either in 4-inch or quart containers. And I was surprised at how big they were. They were virtually the size of 1 gallon containers.
Yeah, so, his stuff is always exceptional. And he always gets, I don't know where Tom gets all this cool stuff, but he gets
some
of it.
Oh, he is in Hawaii. So.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But it's fun to just peruse that website and see what he's got available because you'll be shocked some of the really neat things. The Medanillas particularly I really like. And you know, you can grow those. They really don't like it below about 60 degrees, but I've found that if you're in a frost-free area like Bay Park, Claremont, if you're on the top of a hill, not at the bottom of a canyon, places like that, you could do the Medanilla. And
Medanilla, I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, it's, gosh, what is
that? So you're going to make me say, what is that?
I know, what is that common name? I don't know if it has a common name, but if you look up Medanilla, they're from the Philippines, but big clusters of beautiful. See, we'll ask our Secretary George here to look that up, see if there's a common name. I raised them at the Botanic Garden in the conservatory, but I noticed that in the new Botanic building at Balboa Park, there were some Medanilla in there, and they seem to be doing just fine.
How do you spell that?
Medenilla.
Medenilla.
And Tom had, I bought three or four really neat ones from him, and they are gorgeous. Big panicles of flowers that hang down.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll have George take a look at that while we take a quick break. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more and hopefully the common name of Medanilla when we get back.
Or Medanilla.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. And we were talking about Medanilla.
Correct. We're looking for a common name.
And you found?
Rose grape. It's a rose grape.
That's an interesting common name. Yep. Does it look like a?
It does not look like a rose to me, but it does look kind of cascading grapeish, the way the flowers form.
Like a cluster of grapes.
Like a cluster, yes. And they're kind of purpley violety.
There are some that are nearly blue.
Yeah, so also, they would look like a grape, right?
Very pretty plants. Oh, and they're epiphytic, which there are very, very few
epiphytic
shrubs.
Yeah.
Oh, I do too.
I love epiphytes. I think they are some of the coolest plants. For those of you that are not familiar with the term, epiphytes are plants that grow on trees or other plants
or structure,
but they're not parasites.
Right.
They do not pull nutrients from it. It's not like mistletoe or dodder. They do not pull their nutrients from the host plant. The host plant is merely there for support and structure.
And Ken, when we were talking about your friend from Hawaii with the plants that we just received, you mentioned the word that he can, use the phrase that he can ship legally.
Yes.
And I think that's an important thing for people. If you're purchasing things on the internet from like Etsy or somewhere, that sometimes you might introduce pathogens. Mm. You know, we have citrus leaf miner and we have HLB disease from doing things illegally. And yeah. So it's well, that's something to consider when you're purchasing plants.
Whenever we bring stuff in from out of state, even if it says it doesn't need to be inspected, we always call the ag department and have them come out and inspect. Even our seed packets, other than San Diego Seed Company, all of the seed packets that we get from Botanical Interest and the other companies, they all come from out of state. They all get clearance from the ag department before they go on the shelf. And so that's all seed that's in a packet.
But does each variety of seed need to be inspected?
They come in and they just kind of card file through it and, and look for different. I don't even know what they're looking for because literally everything's sealed in a packet. But we do call the department every time they come in. When we get orders from Monrovia Nursery from their Oregon yard, that all has to get inspected. Anytime something comes from out of state, we call the ag department and have them come and inspect it. And I learned that the hard way, because I had ordered some, and this is kind of a weird story about how they were doing things. This was a few years ago. I ordered some passifloras online through eBay, and the plants came in and it was a legitimate grower. The plants came in, we called the ag department, and they came out, and he's looking at the paperwork, and he said, yeah, this isn't the right paperwork. And we're like, oh, okay. So what's the story? He said, if they don't have the right paperwork, then we're going to have to quarantine everything. And so he said, give me the phone number for the grower. So the agent was super nice. Really. I can't remember his name. He was a super nice, really cool guy. So he called the grower, and he was on the phone with the grower for about 45 minutes. Talking to him about all the certifications and everything and trying his best to work it out for us to keep them. Unfortunately, the grower did not have the correct paperwork.
He had the form 27, right? Whatever. He needed 63.2. Yeah.
He did not have the correct form to ship to California. So the agent confiscated the plants, which I totally understand. And the thing that I didn't understand was I asked him, I said, okay, where do we go from here? He said, we take everything back. And maybe this has been changed, so don't take this as gospel, but this is the story that I got when they were here the last time we went through this. Said, we take everything, we put it into quarantine. We put it into quarantine for 6 weeks. And then if there's no issues with it after 6 weeks, we destroy it. I was like, well, okay, that seems kind of counterproductive to me, but so that was what I was told at the time what was the policy. So if that is the case, why they couldn't return it after 6 weeks if there was no
clean.
Issue
or why not destroy it not just destroy first day it, right?
Don't take a chance.
I used
to import orchids in the late 70s or early 80s and tropical plants, and usually it would have to go to LA, and then they would gas everything regardless. They just as a matter of policy, they gassed it all. Half of everything would die. And then you just try to nurse everything back after having everything gassed.
Yeah, we were ordering bare root orchids from Thailand. It was in the late 70s, early 80s, and we had to jump through a bunch of hoops. We had to get our APHIS permits, and we had all the permits and everything to do it. And it was the company was Coltana Orchids, and I think they were in Bangkok, but they had bare root Paphiopedilum species orchids.
Wow!
So we bought a ton of them, and we brought them over, and we had to get, they got shipped air freight to Lindbergh Field, and then we had to have the ag department come out and inspect everything at Lindbergh Field. They couldn't even deliver, we couldn't even get it back to the nursery until they came and looked at it. And we had a pretty good success rate with it, but it was not too long after that importing stuff in an international basis got extremely complicated, especially anything that even, I mean, if it even looked endangered, it was almost impossible to bring it in. So we ended up letting our APHIS permit expire, and we stopped importing. The other nursery that we were looking at importing from at that time was Alvum Sedel down in Brazil. I think he was in Brazil.
Brazil.
And he was a famous bromeliad collector. And he had a lot of really, really interesting stuff down there to that we were going to try to bring up. But unfortunately, we never did. I think they're still in business. I thought I looked them up not too long ago. But Varicia, Fosteriana, or Sedeliana. Was one that he discovered, and it's a particular cultivar of Fosteriana that just has absolutely stunning foliage on it. A really, really pretty plant. You don't find them up here very. Fosteriana is fairly
common,
but the Sedeliana is not common at all.
Yeah, and Olive Hill growers do a lot of Fosteriana Varicias.
But the Sedeliana, as I recall, had that really pretty kind of rusty tessellated foliage, but the Sedeliana variety, it was banded almost like hieroglyphica, where that tessellation formed in bands on on the foliage. Really, really pretty plant. So that was always one of my favorites.
In the botanic garden world, you have no idea how hard it is, even for us to just get seed from places. We had to jump through 10 hoops and have multiple layers of permits on both ends. It's getting harder all the time.
There's some good reasons and rationales behind it, but it doesn't have to be quite as difficult. You had mentioned an acronym, Ken. You said we let our APHIS.
APHIS, which I can't remember.
Okay, because that's what I was going to say. Throw that stuff out, someone's out there going, what was that?
Yeah.
Well, and now there was APHIS, always accreditation. Phytosanitary certificates is another thing. Yeah. And then also, well, now CITES now works into that, because then do they really think that these were not wild collected plants? Are they protected?
So all of those are governmental permits or ways of importing plants.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I remember before that really got started, can't remember the guy's name, but there was a gentleman that we used to buy from who lived in Mexico most of the time, but would come up to the United States, and he collected orchids and bromeliads, tillandsias, and turtle plants. Dioscorea.
Andy Kincannon, maybe?
No, it wasn't. God, I can't think. I'll have to think of his name. But he used to come. He had an old beater of a van, and he would come up, and the van would just be loaded with stuff. And this was before all the regulation went into it. And he'd cross the border legally, so they would inspect it at the border when it would come in. But he'd have Dioscoreas from like 4 or 5 inches in diameter up to a foot. Bare root. All of his stuff came in bare root, and lelias and oncidiums and just all kinds of stuff that he would bring up. And then they really started cracking down on the wild collection stuff, and that whole thing just disappeared.
It's sad, because when we were collecting orchids, a lot of times they would go in and clear cut forests. So they're cutting mahogany trees down and things. And so they're just cutting whole forests down. And then you're going and collecting what is epiphytically growing on trees that have now fallen.
Right.
Yeah.
And so in a way you're preserving, you know, anyway, it's sort of counterintuitive, and it's sad because it really was preserving what would normally just be chipped and ground up.
Yeah. You know? What would just disappear. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it was a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
It really was, unfortunately. But at least
it's a complicated world.
It really is. But
just in plants, everything else is good, right?
Yeah. Everything
life
else is good.
Simple other than this.
Yeah. Other than plants.
Yeah, and fortunately, there was some really neat stuff collected over the years before that all came to. Jeffrey Kent.
From Kent's
Bromeliad Nursery. He used to go on collecting expeditions down in Central and South America.
Yeah.
On a relatively, this was back in the I would say mid to late 70s. And he was always bringing some interesting stuff back. I remember I think they put it into production. He brought back a beautiful Hohenbergia one time. It was a huge plant. The plants were about 3 feet tall.
Oh my God.
And the foliage was a mahogany brown color with that silver with that silver striping that it had on it. It was a gorgeous plant, and that was one that he had collected in the wild while he was down there. Had some really interesting stuff. And then another one that we had in the late 70s, and I don't know who we got them from, but I have never seen them since. Somebody was collecting from, I think they grow up like 10,000 feet. So that's why they didn't naturalize really well around here. But Tillandsia imperialis, not Varesia imperialis, but Tillandsia imperialis. Mm-hmm. And the flower spike on that was just this. It was about the size of an ear of corn, but it was bright red, brilliant red. And then it had the little tubular bluish purple flowers that would come out of that. And when we would get those in, we would just sell them like crazy. Mm. It was a really neat plant, but I've never seen them since.
Yep. So it has been a long time.
But like I said, the altitude was probably an issue with that. Mm. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. John, you wrote an interesting tidbit that went out on social media. I can't remember if I saw it on, I must have seen it on your Facebook page, but you said it probably went out on Instagram too. And it was about tobacco, which and like you've said in the past, we're not purporting the use of tobacco, but I didn't realize until I saw the article that you had written that tobacco was once a cash crop in San Diego.
It sure was. It's really interesting the number of things that were grown commercially here. So I do these historical posts with photographs, and you'd be surprised. Like, that was down near Otay. That was a very big area for growing tobacco. And there, I had a photo where they're air layering it out and drying it. And it was a cash crop here. The other thing that's shocking is hemp was a huge cash crop in San Diego down, again, mostly Otay down toward what was the Fenton Ranch. You know, there was actually Rancho Otay. That was all Fenton property. And so the other thing that's interesting in terms of past cash crops was silk. Mulberries for silkworms up near the coastal area of Carlsbad. There was a
silk farm in Vista, if I'm not
mistaken. They tried one in Vista, too.
Yeah. They tried growing mulberries and silkworm caterpillars to produce silk.
Yeah.
You know, the tobacco one I found was really interesting. I think I've mentioned it on the air before, but we were back visiting my daughter back in North Carolina. She lives in Durham. And you talk about the tobacco capital of the East Coast.
Right.
The Duke family homestead is back there. And part of the homestead, I'm pretty sure it's on the homestead property. If not, it's close by, is the American Tobacco Museum, which I was fascinated by it. It was absolutely amazing. And, good or bad, however you want to view it, it was a fascinating part of American history, and the tobacco plants a lot of people grow them, and we actually sell them in as bedding plants. The Nicotiana,
right.
the ornamental ones, but it's a very small bedding plant, but the actual tobacco plants get huge.
Oh, these are very big plants,
6 feet or so.
And huge leaves.
Yeah, monstrous leaves. Really, really pretty plant. Mm-hmm. And they have a small spire of flowers at the top of them. And the flowers are typically white to pinkish, fragrant.
And too. Very fragrant.
Very fragrant. There's a company that I found, I don't even know how I came across them, online called seedman.com. Mm. And they have 52 different varieties of tobacco seeds that you can buy. They also have a free online book that you can download on growing tobacco. It's like a 158-page book, and it's on their website. You can download it as a PDF. And I actually ordered some seed from them to grow some to see how it how it does. Because we at the Duke Homestead, they had some tobacco plants growing so you could get an idea of what they look like.
Trying to get people away from tobacco. Just
so. I'm not encouraging people to. I'm not encouraging people to use it. I'm just
the beauty of the plant.
The beauty of the plant. Right. It's a really pretty plant.
And they are gorgeous. You know, the other thing is, I don't know. I hate the smell of cigarettes. It's nasty, but I do like a good cigar. And I used to smoke a pipe, and pipe tobacco is like a whole different animal.
A different animal. The smell of pipe tobacco smells really good. I would not advocate using it.
No, this is not an endorsement.
Right. Yeah. I've never grown fond of any of it. I dislike it all.
Yeah. I used to smoke cigars every once in a while when I was golfing. haven't done that in a long time. But speaking of cigars, when we came back from that trip, I was doing some snooping online, and there's a fine cigar company. I think they're based in Honduras, but I can't remember. Davidoff. Davidoff. Mm-hmm. Very high-end cigars. Mm-hmm. There's actually a documentary, and we'll post a link to it on the Facebook page. George, I sent you the, I'm pretty
yep,
sure
I've
I sent
got
you the,
it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. About Davidoff cigars. Mm. And they go through the whole process of growing the tobacco. And it's interesting in the way that the plants grow. There's on individual plants, there is different foliage on each plant, and each part of the plant that has the different foliage, they use that foliage for a different part of the cigar. So there's mm-hmm. there's filler, and then there's wrapper, and then it's pretty,
far more complicated than you would think, is what you're saying.
It's way more complicated than just going out and picking a bunch of tobacco leaves and rolling it up on your thigh and sticking it in a press and putting it together. It's a very, very interesting process. And I thought I had read one time that one of the main reasons why cigars became popular was as a mosquito deterrent. So if you're sitting in a cloud of cigar smoke, the mosquitoes don't necessarily like to come around you.
And I don't like to be there either. So. Yeah.
So if you want to keep Georgia and mosquitoes away from you, just light up a cigar. That will take care of it.
One other tobacco I think is very worthy of note, and I grow it a lot because I grow it for clients. And it is, let me see if I can remember the botanic name. I'll have to come up with the
give us a common name for
too.
Most people.
Yeah. Woodland tobacco. It is Nicotiana sylvestris. And it's about 3 feet high. Sometimes they'll call it Indian tobacco, but you grow it for the flowers. It blooms at night. And the fragrance from this plant, I'll grow it. It's not a showy plant. It doesn't look mm-hmm. great. It's very thin and wispy, but just put it in a pot behind where you sit outdoors or something, because it'll fill the whole area with the most sweet night scent that you've ever smelled. And so I get it as seed. In fact, they have it here at Walter Anderson Nursery. You can look it up.
Which one it is?
It's Nicotiana sylvestris, and beautiful white flowers, tubular, but the night fragrance is what you're growing that for. Not for the plant, really not for the flowers, but just the fragrance.
It's like night blooming jasmine.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So sestrum. Yeah. So you can put another night fragrance garden around the patio or something. Fragrance. Oh, I like it.
There's also a really lovely Ipomea, which I'm not an... Boy, all these things we are saying but not endorsing. Do not plant Ipomea at home. Except for Moonflower. I'm trying to remember if it's Ipomea alba, but it's Moonflower, fragrant at night, beautiful white flowers. Looks great if you uplight it. We also have the seed for that here mm-hmm. at Walter Anderson yeah. Nursery. I heartily endorse those few things, the tobacco and the Ipomea, only in this case.
Well, there was a
full disclaimer.
There was an interesting Ipomea that Stallings used to grow that had clusters of purple flowers on it, as I recall. They weren't big flowers, but they long tubular purple flowers.
Are they invasive?
I don't think so. I don't know that I've seen it since Stallings went out of business, and that's got to be
most morning glories.
20 years ago,
even if your neighbor has them.
Well, that's why I asked. Yeah, we're still pulling it out of our house. And it's been,
yes. Oh, that's what I was. The Ipomea that I was thinking of is a shrub.
Ipomea cuminata is the one that's so aggressive.
That's the blue one.
The blue one. Yes.
Yeah. It goes. I mean, it's like like a curtain.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. We're pulling it out regularly from our yard.
You know, it's funny, about 30 years ago, somebody had posted an article somewhere, because this was before the internet. So there was an article that was going around about how Ipomea seeds were mildly hallucinogenic.
Mm-hmm, they are.
And we actually had to lock up Morning Glory seeds.
Oh my goodness.
Because people would come in and steal them.
Wow.
There was a run on Morning Glory seed because people were experimenting with it. Not something I would recommend. No. That particular family is not known for public health. Mm-hmm. It's right up there with Jimson weeds.
Yes, the alkaloids are not good.
Not something that you want to be toying around with.
You can get really high or really dead.
Or really dead.
Well, it's also called devil's trumpet, right? Yeah. Jimson weed is also devil's trumpet.
I think so.
Right.
Yeah. Wildwood flower.
Yeah. Any number.
But it's all, same thing with Brugmansia.
Sure.
Which is, if you like nocturnally fragrant plants, Brugmansia is another one that is just, it's intoxicating. The yellow one especially.
Yeah. Ours is in full bloom right now. It's spectacular.
Oh, they're so fragrant. I used to do videos always at the Botanic Garden. And every time I would do one on Brugmansia, people would freak out because I'd get my nose in there and just smell it. It smells so good. And they'd go, you're going to die. No, I won't.
No,
you have to ingest
a lot of it.
Yeah, you're not going to die from the fragrance.
But those are extremely fragrant.
It's probably one of my favorites.
And yet there are caterpillars that eat the dickens out of that thing.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's a moth that pollinates them. Mm-hmm. And ours used to go to seed pretty regularly, but the seed was never viable. Mm. So I don't know what it takes to get viable seed off of them, but whatever we were doing wasn't doing it. Mm. You know, another one that is really highly nocturnally fragrant, but you really don't see it very much at all anymore, is it used to be Brassavola, and then they changed the name to Wrinkleilea digbyana.
Yes, digbyana with the frilled, with the fimbriated lip.
With a really frilly lip. And mm-hmm. I remember we used to get those at the San Diego store, and when we were locking up at night, when they were in bloom, the entire store, you could smell it through the entire store. Incredibly.
Citrusy, just beautiful
tropical
scent.
Just a wonderful, wonderful fragrance. But actually, most of the Brassavolas were fragrant.
Almost all of them are. Yeah. In fact, Brassavola nodosa is a very fragrant, wonderful little orchid.
Big clumping.
Mm-hmm.
Epiphyte. Another.
Speaking of
epiphytes, actually, both of them. The big ban is an epiphyte too. Looks like a Cattleya with a giant frilly lip to it, and it's a really unusual kind of lime green color.
Mm-hmm, it is,
and it green. There's a number of,
and the
orchids.
Foliage is almost silver on Digbyana too.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very coarse looking foliage. Mm-hmm. It's not the real nice green that you see on Cattleyas and some of the other Brassavolas.
You know, next week we're going to have Chuck McClung.
Yes,
that's a great thing to bring up with him when we start talking about all these different orchids, just as a side note, to bring that up.
I will make a note of that to talk about orchids when Chuck joins us. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to be back with more right after this, so don't go away.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on Garden Talk. I got totally messed up on that. Okay, yeah, we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We do have classes coming up today, 28th of June, in San Diego at 9 o'clock. It's going to be companion planting with Kathleen. And at 9:30 at the Poway store, it's going to be growing plumerias with Mike Atkinson, who we have had on this show in the past. So
Mr. Plumeria.
Mr. Plumeria, who's probably forgot more about plumerias than I ever knew.
The king of all plumeria, I call him.
Yes. Yeah, outstanding class. So both of them are going to be very good classes. If you are interested in growing plumerias, Mike's class is one to catch.
And he's a very entertaining speaker, too.
Yes, sorry to interrupt. I was going to say, he is also, he draws a lot of people. So if you plan on coming, you definitely want to get here early.
Yeah, definitely get here early to get a good seat. Prior to the break, we were talking about nocturnally fragrant flowers. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I had just happened to stumble across, one of my favorite websites for horticultural and gardening articles and information is the Brooklyn Botanical Garden website, bbg.org. They have a whole library of articles that you can go through, and it looks like a spectacular botanical garden.
One of the best.
I've never been there, but my son lives in Brooklyn, so now I got to go.
It's not very big, but it's very cool.
I got to go visit him, and I got to go visit the Brooklyn Botanical Garden. But they had an article about moon gardens, which I had never.
You didn't know you can plant on the moon, did you?
I had never heard of that before, but it's particularly plants, usually white plants that will somewhat glow under moonlight. So you can actually enjoy your garden in the evening hours in the moonlight. There was a number of different things, some of them that were relatively familiar, the sweet alyssum one.
Mm-hmm, right.
Nice white, mm-hmm, almost ground cover type bedding plant.
I think that's more fragrant in the evenings.
Mm-hmm. I've never noticed so it too. Before. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of the fragrance.
I love that.
Yeah. Oh, see, I love that one too.
There's a Lobularia maritima, Tiny Tim, which I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, we don't grow it really here.
Yeah. A Nicotiana is another one that they had listed in their garden. Very fragrant also. Belle Blanche, which I'm not familiar with. It looks like almost looks like a gypsum. It's one of the trumpet flowers. That again, that's one that's not super common here. Bishop's flower, Amimagus, which we've had that from time to time.
Mm-hmm. And you can start that one really easily from seed.
Yes. Yeah, that's one of the things that they recommend is growing it from seed. They even say you can get 1,000 seeds for $5.95. That's a lot of seeds.
It's a bargain.
Yeah.
At twice the price.
Giant moonflower.
Yeah, that's the one we were just talking about.
Ipomea alba is another one.
I'm very skittish on those. I'm afraid of overpowering everything.
Yeah. It isn't as aggressive as tamer. The other Ipomea. Yeah.
Well, here is one that is incredibly aggressive, and I don't know that I would recommend planting it in your yard.
Mexican primrose.
Pink evening primrose or Mexican evening primrose. Onothera speciosa rosea.
Oh, it takes over.
It is a tough one. You could grow it in a container, put a saucer underneath of it so it doesn't root out through the bottom of the container, but I would not recommend putting it in. I would not recommend planting it in the ground. It's like mint.
Yes.
If you want something that's going to be almost impossible to get rid of, that's a great one to plant in the ground. But mint and Mexican evening primrose, I would be very cautious about those.
Run screaming the other direction.
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny. There's the yellow Onothera. I can't remember which variety it is. It's not invasive at all. Mm-mm. Not at all. And it's actually a really pretty plant. The flower is much, much bigger, and I think it's much showier than the Mexican evening primrose. Tanacetum, that one I'm not familiar with. White Star is the name of it.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that.
I'm not familiar with that.
I had not heard of that before. It was a perennial in zones 5 through 9. So I would think that it would be okay. But that's a, I'm gonna make a note to look that one up. Tanacetum.
It's pretty.
Yeah. It almost looks like a white marguerite.
Mm-hmm. Near some chrysanthemum of a plant.
Kind of a chrysanthemum. And Nemophila maculata.
I've raised Nemophila from seed. It does okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting.
Is it a pure white?
It's white with a blue almost, dots. It's like a blue thumbnail on the end of the flower. A neat looking plant. Actually, native to California.
Yeah, it is. You'll find it in wildflower mixes sometimes.
Yeah, that's one I haven't seen before.
No, other ones that are really nice for evening gardens for the scent and also for the flower is Oh, goodness. Think of the name, John. Brunfelsia alata.
Oh, yeah.
It's called, it's or Lactea. It's a Brunfelsia Lactea. It's a kind of a cream flower, very fragrant at night. And it's related to yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
That's, you know? Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I've seen it. I've seen it around. The ones that you usually see are the yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And there's two varieties of those. There's the big one, which was used to be the purple one.
Imperialis
or Grandiflora or. Yeah. But there's a large flowering one that's about where the flowers are almost 3 inches across. And then there's a small flowering one. And that's the small flowering one was the most common one. But the one that everybody wanted was the giant one.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about the giant one was the foliage was completely different, too. Mm-hmm. It had very long, elongated foliage. Wiedner's used to grow those, I think.
Yes, Evelyn Wiedner would get those. Yeah.
She would grow some really nice ones. Mm-hmm. It wasn't super common. Mm-hmm. But we would, whenever we could get them, we would. It's a neat plant. The small flowering yesterday, today, and tomorrow, Monrovia was growing those for a while. I don't know if they still are, but
I think they still are.
Yeah, I've select varieties.
Yeah,
it's more compact. It's compact, smaller foliage. It's better looking plant than the larger flowering one. And the reason why they call it yesterday, today, and tomorrow is when the flower opens, it's purple. And then the following day, it kind of fades to a lavender color. Mm-hmm. And then the final day that the flower is on the plant, it fades to almost white. Mm-hmm. So it goes through.
And it's fragrant throughout.
And it is fragrant.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It is a fragrant one.
Here's an interesting thing. I was looking up the Mexican evening primrose that you were speaking of, and it lists all the great qualities. It's delicate, beautiful pink flowers, evergreen in mild winters, low maintenance, no thorns, low litter, not toxic, important food source for pollinators. And then underneath it, it says ways to eradicate Mexican evening primrose. Back to your point about being highly aggressive.
It is incredibly aggressive. It is a very, very tough thing to get rid of once it gets a hold of your garden. You want to watch out. So be very careful where you put it. We were doing some work on some of the maintenance equipment that we have here at the nursery here in Poway. And I happened to go down to Western Mower Supply on Pomerado Road. If you have gas-powered gardening tools, they are a fantastic resource. One of the things that I had noticed, and I had noticed it at Home Depot too, is they sell pre-mixed two-stroke gasoline for
engineered fuel.
Engineered for fuel.
And I can't tell you how many gas-powered tools over the years that we have destroyed because people don't know how to mix
the proper ratio
of two-stroke oil to gasoline. You cannot run just straight pump gas in a two-stroke engine. It will kill it. And I can testify to that from the number of things that we have burned up here at the store over the years. And from now on, we only have one, and we don't use it very often. But from now on, we're just going to buy the pre-mixed fuel.
It's much better.
It's not only a better fuel, it's easy, it's foolproof. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about it.
It doesn't get gummy.
It doesn't have the ethanol, right?
And it doesn't have the ethanol.
So, yeah.
Well, and that's the other thing that Western Mower sells, and this had never occurred to me, is they said if you have a gas-powered lawnmower, a four-stroke gas-powered lawnmower, anything, any kind of gardening equipment that is four-stroke, don't use pump gas because of the ethanol that's in it. And not only can the ethanol react adversely with some of the components, especially rubber and things like that, it absorbs water.
Yes. Pulls it right out of the air into your tank.
Right out of the air. Yep. And you'll end up with water in your fuel, which at the very least, it's not going to run well. Mm-hmm. So they recommend using non-ethanol fuel, which they also sell. So if you...
It is a little pricier.
It's about $7 a quart.
Yeah. We have a gas powered generator. And when we were doing all the work up where we live, we'd have to run for 24, 30 hours and we would use the gas powered generator. I would use pump gas during that time. But if I let it sit and then go to use it, a month, 2 months later, I would have to take the carburetor off the bowl and clean out the bowl because it was just gum.
Yeah.
And then put it back together.
The needles in the carburetors get sticky. It's terrible.
Yeah.
The other thing that's really important with the equipment, don't let old gas just sit in it. It just ruins
it.
Everything.
Turns gums to varnish.
Varnish.
Right.
And so what I tend to do is only use the engineered fuel. Don't ever use anything right out of the pump. And then if you take that in to get repaired, even to just have the carburetors done, it's, I've found it to be at least $150, $175.
Which, that sounds cheap.
And that's half the price of a new one.
Yeah.
So you don't want to have your equipment just sitting around.
Yeah. It's definitely not something that you want to do. And the other advice that they gave me, which I had never thought about, was they said, when you're getting, if you're getting ready to put your equipment into storage, they said, never run it dry.
Hmm.
Don't run it out of gas. They said, that's a bad thing to do. Mm. People think it's a good thing. You're going to run all the fuel out of it and it's going to be dry and go forward. But he said that's not a good idea.
Mm. And there are additives that you can put in with your gas if you're going to store it. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
Stabilizers.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Use that in my boat. So that's a good one. So anyway, if you need help with any of your gas powered equipment, Western Mower on Palmerado Road.
I've been going to them for 30 plus years. They used to be by Walgreens.
That's right.
They've been in this place for about 18 years.
Yeah, they were at the corner of Community and Palmerado.
That's for a long time.
Community and Poway Road for many years.
Yeah. And now right where that Walgreens is.
Yeah, right now. And now they're near the intersection of Palmerado and
Oak Knoll. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fantastic people. Wonderful. So, classes once again in San Diego today. It's going to be companion planting with Kathleen, and in Poway at 9:30, it's going to be growing plumerias with Mike Atkinson. You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ. Oh, and don't forget, next week, Chuck McClung, former employee here of ours and also a local author, is going to be joining us. So tune in next week for another hour of Garden Talk. We'll be back then. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.